Thanks for listening to the best of the Ben Maller Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 2 to 6 Eastern, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And to find your local station for the Ben Maller Show at foxsportsradio.com, you can find it there. Or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of the Ben Maller Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Now, typically we talk about the Sunday night NFL game. That is what we begin with. It has been the secret formula on this show for a long time. It makes it very easy. Whatever the Sunday night game is, that's always the showcase game for the NFL, and we just discuss what happened in the Sunday night game. But this night is different than all other Sunday nights. Now, why is that into Monday? Because this night saw the Pittsburgh Steelers with like their seventh string quarterback take on the LA Chargers in Pittsburgh West with all these terrible towels in the crowd and all that stuff. And it was, the game was such a dog's lunch that it does not provide great conversation. Pittsburgh jumped out to a 24-0 lead going to the fourth quarter, and the Chargers got a couple of garbage time scores and say, well, they had a chance. They had the ball down by a touchdown. Okay. That's technically true. The reality is the Chargers had little chance to do anything, and they made it respectable. So they're now 2-4. They have the same record as the Pittsburgh Steelers, who with that win are 2-4. And Philip Rivers continues to be a mistake-prone mess yet again for the Los Angeles Chargers, formerly of San Diego, who are now reeling. And some guy named Devlin Hodges. Now, if you saw, and I want to talk about the baseball game, but Devlin Hodges, the third-string quarterback, who's really like the fifth-string quarterback because the backup they had traded before Roethlisberger got hurt, and then they brought somebody else. And anyway, Devlin Hodges, the first half was fine. He was filling in for Mason Rudolph, who got concussed and was knocked out. And he was really good, this guy, Devlin Hodges, in the first half. He was really bad in the second half. Someone named Benny Snell.
Never heard of him.
I don't know who it is, but he ran for 75 yards. James Conner had a couple of touchdowns, and the Steelers were led by Devin Bush, the Bush Push, the linebacker, as he was the beneficiary of some sloppiness from Philip Rivers. He recovered a pair of Charger giveaways, and that's it. But the better story is in the baseball locker room. Yankees and Astros, game two of the American League Championship Series. The Bronx Bombers dominated Zach Greinke and friends in game one over the weekend, and we're looking to go up 2-0 and go back to the boogie down Bronx with a really good vibration. Really good vibration in that locker room. And how did that work out? Well, it worked all right until they went to the 11th inning and Carlos Correa delivering for the Astros the game-winning home run as the Astros squeak out by the closest of margins a victory over the Houston Astros, a marathon baseball game, which is all that's wrong with baseball. 4 hours and 49 minutes, a conga line of relief pitchers, and a lot of it was unnecessary. A lot of the relief pitching was unnecessary, but Correa ends the marathon night with a walk-off home run that not only tied the ALCS at one game apiece, it also allowed the Astros to let some air out. All right? That's what we call the exhale situation in this one. So let's discuss your thoughts, the big takeaways here from Game 2 of the American League Championship Series between the Yankees and the Astros. You've got the cocky, the battle plan, and the long game. All right, the cocky, the battle plan, and the long game, and we will tie all of these things together here. Now, A, the Bronx Bombers, let's be honest here, they were completely hornswoggled by Astros pitching in this game. The Yankees' offense was non-existent. They had the Aaron Judge home run. He hits a moonshot, which wasn't even really a moonshot by his standards, and that was about it. I believe the Yankees had one hit after the sixth inning, and they went to the 11th inning, one stinking hit. And Houston, listen, they've got good pitching, but that is unacceptably bad offense if you're an aficionado of the Yankees. But this game, as we pointed out, was a much bigger deal for the Astros, even though they've got the monster. They've got the monster rotation. Everyone loves to talk about how great the Astros rotation is and all that, yada, yada, yada. Kiss, kiss, lick, lick. That's how the media does it with the Astros. They love the Astros. I get it. I understand. Be more fun when they lose, and they will lose to the Yankees here in this series. But listen, after getting punched in game one, because really the Yankees did deliver a haymaker in game one. They could not afford to lose. The Astros have to win every time Verlander and Gerrit Cole pitch. They do that, they'll win the series. The Yankees, on the other hand, they have to win every game that those guys don't start, which I think is only three, and then they have to win one out of four. So they had one of their four opportunities, in theory, to beat either Verlander or Gerrit Cole, assuming those guys will pitch two times in this situation, and they lost game one, even though it was squared up 2-2, and that's the other thing here. I mean, you talk about the Yankees here. Aaron Boone got cocky. He got cocky early in the game. The Yankees manager, Boone, pulled James Paxton after just 2 1/3 innings. Now, I understand there's some concern about Paxton, and he's been the wild thing at times. He's been up and down like a yo-yo. I get all that. But you got to get more than 2 1/3 innings out of your starting pitcher. That is completely – it's not like he was getting lit up or anything like that. The Yankees were so paranoid that he was going to get lit up that they preemptively took him out of the game because they're like, well, this guy's going to suck, so we better get him out of the game because before he really does suck. And the Astros had scored a run in the second inning, and then Paxton ended up going 2 1/3 innings, gave up four hits. So he was – listen, he was not great, but you got to be able to get more than 2 1/3 innings out of your starting bleeping pitcher, who had a couple of walks in the game. But then after that, it was literally a parade. It was like a Columbus Day parade, which is here on Monday. Everyone, come on down, everyone. You know, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 relief pitchers came in for the Yankees. 8 bleeping relief pitchers. And Yankee pitchers now, you know, Yankee pitching has given up 10 runs in 5 postseason games. And never more than one run in any of the innings they've pitched. But that doesn't really matter if you lose the game and you only score a couple of runs. It doesn't matter. The Yankees powering up here. And there's also that play in the 6th inning. Brett Gardner hit an infield single. The Yankees sent DJ LeMahieu home with 2 outs. And he was thrown out on a perfect throw by Jose Altuve, if I recall, in that inning. And listen, that was the right call there. That was absolutely the right call by the Yankees. I mean, you put the pressure. I have no problem putting the pressure on the defense because I've seen too many guys choke defensively. And so I'm not going to kill the Yankees for that. I think you take your shot there and you hope that the throw's a little off or that the catcher drops the throw. I think you take your shot on that. I don't think that's a bad play in that situation. And the Yankees have another problem here is that, you know, all those relief pitchers were great. They had to, but then they had to go to like guys like Sabathia and J.A. Happ, who ultimately lost the game. That was not the intention. Okay. That was not Aaron Boone's intention when he started bringing in all these relief pitchers. He's like, all right, we're going to get through this with Chapman in the 9th, and then that's it. We're not going to have to worry about going in and bringing all these other guys in and all this blah, 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 blah. And sure enough, they had to go to blah, 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 blah. And Adam Ottavino, this guy, he gave up the run there in his 1/3 of an inning pitch. He gave up the home run. One of all the Astros, you look at their offense here, but they had the Correa double in the 2nd, but Springer the home run, that was a shot to center. And Carlos Correa, the home run that won it to right for the Astros. But the second thing here, part B, the Yankees followed the battle plan perfectly. They did not allow Justin Verlander to beat them. If you go into this game, if you're the Yankees, you're like, okay, let's just have a shot against the Astros bullpen. And they did that. That was the goal going in. The Bronx Bombers were able to ride out the Verlander start. The horse of Houston allowed just a couple of runs on that Aaron Judge home run, and he ended up working 6 2/3 innings. So he's into the 7th inning, and he allowed 5 hits, couple of walks, 7 strikeouts, but 109 pitches. That is, you leave the game tied up at 2, you're like, okay. You know, get a run across against the Astros bullpen. The Astros bullpen's not the strength of the Astros. you can score a run against those guys. Those guys aren't invincible unless they were invincible for the most part. The Astros bullpen, and they brought a bunch of guys in, five guys. They did not give up any runs. The Yankees only had the home run by Aaron Judge, but that's realistic. That's all you could hope for if you're the Yankees in that spot, and it didn't work out. So if the Astros were going to win, they were going to have to beat the Yankee bullpen. And they didn't really – I don't think they beat the Yankee bullpen in the sense that the good Yankee relief pitchers, the meat and potatoes of the Yankee relief pitching staff, it was the dreck at the back of the Yankee bullpen that they did not intend to have to pitch. They did not – when Aaron Boone decided to pull James Paxton after 2 1/3 inning, he's in the third inning of the game, he did not think, well, okay, at some point we're going to have Sabathia as a situational left-hander out of the bullpen and J.A. Happ is going to come in and relieve. That was not the goal. That was not the stated goal of the Yankees. All right, let's hear from some of the participants in this game. Here is A.J. Hinch, the Astros manager, who apparently is aware of the conditions, aware of what's on the line.
We know what's at stake. I mean, that's
okay, good.
The emotion's real out there.
Real.
The intensity, you know, our fans were incredible. These two games, we're going into a crazy environment in Yankee Stadium, and, you know, tied 1-1. So I'll let you know at the end of the series how it feels.
So I have to wait till the end of the series? You can't tell me now? I don't know how crazy it is at Yankee Stadium. Anybody that's a real Yankee fan can't afford to go to a Yankee game. It's all the Wall Street fat cats that buy the tickets around home plate. The hardcore Yankee fan has been priced out of Yankee Stadium. Let's keep it real here. I mean, I guess those Wall Street tycoons can be very loud, but the Bronx bleacher bums, not many of them are around. And there might be a few out in the outfield, but the majority of Yankee Stadium is the one percenters who can afford those tickets. That's the reality. All right, Justin Verlander did not figure in the decision, but he points out that, listen, This is very important. Verlander's going to give you drop some baseball knowledge on you.
I've been a part of some pretty special ball clubs. I mean, I guess can't really answer that question until it's all said and done. If we come away with what we're hoping to accomplish, then you know, maybe, yeah.
Oh, maybe. He was asked if the Astros were the top team he's been on. So he's pretty much saying that the result will determine whether the best team he's been on and not the, yeah. So you got the short game and the long game. The short game for the Yankees, they get what they want. The long game is they have to find a way. As we said, the formula here, if you're going to beat the Astros, you got to beat Cole and Verlander at least once. I mean, but that gives you no margin for error. That means you got to beat Greinke. You already beat him in the first game. You got to beat him again, and then you figure the Astros somewhere along the way here are going to start somebody else, some other schmo will come in and pitch. You got to win that game.
I liked him in that spot. I really did.
So you got to beat the schmo and Greinke twice. That gets you the three wins. You got to win a fourth. So you got to beat Cole or Verlander. All you have to hope is that Verlander or Cole have like diarrhea and they can't pitch very effectively, or food poisoning or something like that. Some Manhattan eatery needs to give them a bad dinner. And then all of a sudden, ta-da, you have the outcome. Anyway,
be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
It was one of the more intriguing matchups going in. It was not a primetime game. It wasn't even in the late television window, but the Houston Texans and the Kansas City Chiefs. It's been slim pickings of late for Kansas City. They lost last week at home to Indianapolis, then came back the week before that. They won by the skin on their chinny chin chin against the Detroit Lions, and now they had the Texans at Arrowhead and Deshaun Watson. Now, he only had one passing touchdown and a couple on the ground, and the Texans, despite some mistakes by Watson, outlasted the Chiefs 31-24 with a marvelous fourth quarter at Arrowhead, and both defensively and offensively. For Houston, Carlos Hyde carried the load on the ground against his former team. Remember, he had been with Kansas City prior to the year. A big win for the Houston Texans as they get her done. But you know the drill. The better story is in the losing locker room. Kansas City's now lost two in a row at home. But a lot of the chatter, this is what I really want to get to on this game, a lot of the chatter is about the quarterbacks. And some have taken the leap of faith because of the outcome of this game that Deshaun Watson is now better than Patrick Mahomes. It's we call an overreaction. An overreaction. But why don't we address this, because it is being discussed by some. Is Deshaun Watson now a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes? The answer is no. No, if you had to choose and you could pick either Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, you are going to take Patrick Mahomes. That is what you're going to do. You're going to take the well-done steaks. You're going to take the ketchup. You're going to take all of that. Now, my observations here. You've got the prisoner, Dr. Jekyll, and Mr. Hyde, and Disney. And we will lock all of this together. Now, number one, Deshaun Watson. Listen, overall, he was spotty. Now, the only thing you remember about a game is the turning point and the outcome, right? Studies have indicated that. You remember the turning point in the game and the outcome of the game. You don't remember the rest of it. It gets lost in your memory bank. You can't remember everything. But in this game, Watson, he finished with more interceptions than touchdown passes, which I believe ultimately is the job of a quarterback not to do that. He averaged less than 7 yards per pass attempt. That's average is 7 yards. He was at 6.7. But to the victor goes the spoils. Deshaun Watson was better late with the game on the line than the other guy. And that's the difference. In the fourth quarter, you saw the game, you know what I'm talking about. In the fourth quarter, Deshaun Watson made several plays that were the difference in the game. In fact, he did not have an incomplete pass in the fourth quarter, the final stanza. 7 of 7 for 90 yards. Now, he didn't have a touchdown pass, no interceptions, but did have a rushing touchdown and converted the two-point pass play to DeAndre Hopkins that turned out to be a crucial play in this game. Watson stepping up, outplaying Mahomes down the stretch. Despite that, though, what do I always say? Don't be a prisoner of the moment. Patrick Mahomes did not lose everything he had gained, every advantage he had gained because of a couple of games where he didn't play as well as the other team's quarterback. Like in this game or last game, he actually played better than the Colts quarterback, Jacoby Brissett. But listen, Mahomes is better than Deshaun Watson. He's flying through some dark clouds right now. These last 3 weeks have been a little unsettling. But Deshaun Watson, he's had some snickers. See, this is the main flaw in the argument. Well, Deshaun Watson is now passed Mahomes by. You have to discount the game back in week two against Jacksonville when Watson had 159 yards and no touchdowns in that game. You have to discount the game in week four just a few weeks ago when Deshaun Watson had 160 yards and no touchdowns against Carolina. So that's also the same Deshaun Watson. Yeah, he is. Games like this, where last week against Atlanta, where he lit up the Falcons, everyone lights up the Atlanta Falcons. But Kansas City, listen, Watson was the beneficiary of playing a food stamps defense in Kansas City. The Chiefs have gaping holes on that side of the ball. And they were able to get by early on, but eventually, the more games you play, the injuries start taking their toll, and you are exposed on a more regular basis. And also, let's not discount Carlos Hyde, who had 116 yards and a touchdown to dominate on the ground. That's really, he was more impressive than Deshaun Watson, although Watson was good late in the game. Now, the second thing here, while Patrick Mahomes is the better of the quarterbacks, and you'd rather have him, it doesn't much matter in this game because you lost the game. And it's an upsetting situation for Andy Reid and friends in this situation. Kansas City has gone from unstoppable juggernaut, almighty, all-powerful, all-being on offense to sporadic. They are now sporadic. Patrick Mahomes, and we've talked about this the last couple of weeks, Mahomes from quarter to quarter, it's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. He has become a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of quarterback. And he had been so good over the last year and a half and so consistent, it was almost boring because you just expected it, that you expected him to play at a superstar level every game. He ain't that guy every moment of every game. Not anymore. Quarter by quarter, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know which Mahomes is going to show up. For example, the Chiefs were nursing a one-point lead. They actually had the lead going to the fourth quarter of this game. 24-23 at home. You figure, well, Mahomes is going to make a couple of plays in the fourth quarter. He had the worst quarter of his career. Down in the final 15 minutes, Mahomes, how bad was he? 1 of 3 passing for minus 4 yards in the fourth quarter, nursing a one-point lead. Kansas City, as a team, had minus 3 yards of offense in the final 15 minutes. And while the Texans put up 145 yards of offense in the final quarter, Deshaun Watson was, I mentioned the number, 7 of 7, 90 yards in the fourth quarter. Houston had 10 first downs. And the Kansas City Chiefs had obviously none. If you get minus 3 yards, it's hard to pick up a first down. I would say it's even impossible to pick up a first down in that situation. So, and you break it down, when you say Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. What does that mean? Let's expand on that. So Mahomes was great in the first and third quarters of this game. In fact, if you look at the numbers and combine the numbers in the first and the third quarter, he had 213 yards combined in those quarters, 9.2 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, at a passer rating of 127. Wonderful. Maestro. Great, right? But what about the second and the fourth quarters? Don't ask. He was terrible. Mahomes completed just 6 of 12 passes for 60 yards, 5 yards per attempt, no touchdowns, had an interception, and a passer rating of under 30. And this is the problem. From quarter to quarter, you're not getting the consistent variety of quarterback play from Patrick Mahomes. Now, the final point here, we're going to hear from Mahomes and Andy Reid in a minute, but the final point. So the Chiefs have failed to get any muscle on the defensive side. They don't have impact players on that side of the ball. And you have essentially a Disney movie for Kansas City. Offense, defense, Beauty and the Beast is the movie, right? The offense is a beauty, the defense is the beast. And that's the formula here, right? Kansas City offense is your work of art. Even with these bad moments for Mahomes, overall, even in the turbulence, you'd still take that. And the defense, ghastly. Just brutal. Think of this like going to a bullfight. You know the song the Chiefs should play when their team's on defense? Ole, 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 ole. That's what they ought to play. It's like a matador. They're like a matador defensively, right? With the bull and all that. It's a matador-level defense. Lackluster, low effort, all that. And it's been this way for the last couple of years in Kansas City, right there. And then the Chiefs. Now, my advice for the Chiefs is to go out and make a trade. It's not my money. It's not my team. But I would go out and make a deal. Make an impact trade. There are players to be had. The big one is Jalen Ramsey. Jacksonville says, I won't trade him. Well, everyone has a price on their head, and if you meet the price of Jacksonville, they will suddenly decide to trade Jalen Ramsey. And that would be a guy I would obviously go out and get to fix the secondary, at least half of the secondary, because he could take away the other team's top receiver, which would give you a fighting chance. We'll give you a fighting chance. And if not him, how about Patrick Peterson, who's been suspended because he's dirty, but he's coming back from the Cardinals. His suspension is up, and you can get him from Arizona's no good. You can pick him up. So there's a guy you can get. There's two players. Like either one of those guys, you make the trade. Make the move. Who cares about a first-round pick? You're in your window of opportunity right now if you're Kansas City. What are you worried about? First, you know, you can draft players in the third, fourth, fifth rounds or whatever. You don't need a first round pick. Trade a couple of first round picks. All right, here's Patrick Mahomes, who points out that, well, in days like this, there's a lot of emotions.
I feel like I'm good now, honestly. I mean, I'm still able to scramble. I'm still able to run and do all those different things. And so, obviously, I'll still get treatment and stuff like that. But I feel like I can still do everything I need to do.
Yeah, that's the media trying to put excuses in there when Mahomes doesn't win a game. Much like in baseball, he was tipping his pitches. In basketball, it's he's fatigued when a star player doesn't play well. In football, it's always he's hurt. That's all. I figured out all of the excuses in these different sports. I should write a book about this. All right, here's Andy Reid. Now, we know Andy, when his team loses, he blames himself. We've got to coach better. We've got to do a better job. He never blames the players. He always blames himself. And then he praises the other team. Here's Andy Reid up to his old tricks.
I've got to do a better job of getting our team ready to go, and that's where it starts. We're more disciplined than what we're showing with the penalties and drops and so on. We've got it in tackling. We've got a, you know, we've got a bunch of things we've got to work on here.
Yeah. Okay. Just wonderful. All right, it is the Ben Maller Show on Fox. We'll take some phone calls here. You can be part of the festivities at 877-99 on Fox, 877-996-6369. I mentioned this last hour. I didn't pay it off. It's a bad job by me. But a sports team believes that they are being jinxed by a pop star. Taylor Swift is jinxing a sports team. This is a quite the story. The sports team in question here, the Los Angeles Kings of the National Hockey League, and the LA Kings believe... No, let me explain. They believe that Taylor Swift is putting some bad mojo on their team, so they have covered up a Taylor Swift banner to try to get rid of the bad mojo from Taylor Swift. Now, before the 2019-2020 home opener for the Kings, they opened up on Saturday... They covered up the Taylor Swift banner that had been hanging at Staples Center since August of 2015, and they decided, some of these geniuses with the LA Kings in the locker room decided that that was a jinx the last couple of years. They're blaming Taylor Swift, and the Kings did win. They beat Nashville, and I think they put up 7 goals in that game on Saturday, so they have... They have covered up the Taylor Swift banner, and they put a... Why would they even put a banner up anyway? But she had sold out the most sold out performances, I guess, at Staples Center or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And so they, which is just dumb, you know, it's just stupid. And they covered it up. Good for them. And yeah, that'll change everything. That'll change. Of course, also getting good players would help, but God forbid. Anyway, we are on Twitter at Ben Maller. You can be part of the show that way. That's at Ben Maller. And I believe Taylor Swift is also jinxing my radio career. I would be doing a morning drive show somewhere if it was not for Taylor Swift.
I like whacking.
I blame her. I clearly blame her. Yeah. Let's see. 49er Rob says, what, Ben? No Maller monologue on your Rams? Say it's not so, Ben. The Rams are beyond Maller monologue territory at this point here. They are beyond Maller monologue territory here. They are condemned. The building has been condemned. Bring in the wrecking ball.
Have the lambs stopped screaming?
Yes. It's Silence of the Lambs is what it is. That is exactly what's going on. Silence of the Lambs.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. It's Maller.
How about that?
To the third degree. This is when Big Ben gets grilled.
And the Coupe de Loop.
Ben, so we haven't mentioned it yet this
What's
show.
That? But what did we not mention?
Well, we found out over the weekend that Tyler Skaggs received his drugs from an Angels employee.
Not only that, Coupe de Loop, this is where it got really close to home. I've known the guy that gave him the dope for... I've known him for over 20 years.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable, man. My head was spinning over the weekend with this Tyler Skaggs story. I know everyone involved in that. I didn't know Tyler Skaggs, but I knew Tim Mead. I knew for a long time the Angel PR guy and this other guy. It is wild, man.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to process everything that I learned over the weekend according to that report.
It's interesting because all the headlines said that, you know, the guy, you know, admits to supplying Tyler Skaggs with the drugs. But he only admitted to it after the DEA read text messages between the two.
Well, yeah, he got caught. And I'm sure that's not the only thing that was on Tyler Skaggs' phone because he was apparently doing drugs. These guys were drug buddies.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be the guy that would go out and get the drugs and then Skaggs would pay for them.
Right.
They're both culpable, though, right?
Yeah, craziness. Yeah. But anyway, Ben, the question that I have for you is, do you think that all of these revelations that it has to do with, you know, what's coming from within the organization, do you think that's going to scare away potential coaching candidates like Joe Madden?
Well, I believe it will have no bearing as far as Joe Madden's concerned. And I'll tell you why. Madden loves the Angels organization. He spent so much time in his adult life working for the Angels that this would actually, I believe, give him more reason to take the job because the Angels are in a bad spot right now. They're in a flying through some dark clouds. The franchise morale's in the toilet. And he would give the team a boost. And I think that will encourage him to take the job. Plus, Madden's a pretty confident guy. He thinks he can get out of this. And as I mentioned, Coop, the other part of this, this Eric Kay guy, who I've known, he was always good to me over the years there. One of the people in the Angels that I got along with in their organization. And I wish I could say he was an a-hole and a schmuck and all that, because that's certainly what the story is. But my dealings with him, he was always nice to me, and I was blindsided by the story when I saw it over the weekend. It's terrible all the way around. I will tell you, though, as far as the Tyler Skaggs part of it, I know the family, I understand it, they want to blame this guy, but the way, and maybe that this is wrong, but the way the story was reported, these guys were drug buddies, as I said. They were hanging out together, and if he hadn't gotten the drugs from him, he would have got them from somebody else, and apparently Skaggs got the drugs from multiple people, but he was the one pursuing the drugs. If he hadn't gotten it from them, he just would have kept looking for it someplace else. But I believe Madden, this will have no bearing on whether or not he takes the job or not. All right, next!
Now, reports say that Curt Schilling apparently wants a job in baseball,
yeah,
and has had his eyes on the Phillies job or the Red Sox pitching coach job. And what are the chances that he gets a coaching job in baseball?
Well, it's not zero, but it's pretty close. It's like 2%, and I'm being generous when I say 2%. At number one, Curt Schilling is way too polarizing in these polarizing times that we live in politically. He has been an outspoken Republican operative, and he's been hanging out on the edges in recent years, and he's got he had a political radio show. I don't know if he still has it or not, but he has been living in cloud cuckoo land is where he has been residing here with some of his hot takes, and he would need to find an owner who shares the same political ideology, which is not impossible. I mean, there are a lot of owners that are Republicans that believe a lot of things Schilling believes, maybe not to that extreme. And secondly, Schilling knows, he knows he's not, very little chance of getting a job. He knows he is too much of a hot potato. So my theory on this is he believes, like, he can be like the martyr when he's denied, right? It's, I tried, nobody will hire me because of my politics and all this stuff. I actually think he would be a pretty good pitching coach, and he wouldn't be a terrible manager, just as from a baseball strategical standpoint. But part of getting the job is being hireable, and because of the politics, and you got to sell tickets to Democrats and Republicans, it becomes a problem. Although I will tell you, it only works that way. Like the NBA, for example, you've got extreme Democratic advocates like Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr. It doesn't seem to affect the Warriors and Spurs from selling tickets, but if it goes the other way, they have a problem. All right, next.
Ben, Richard Sherman claimed in an interview last week that he was offered the Monday Night Football job. Do you believe him, and do you think he'd be good at it?
No, I don't believe anything that Richard Sherman says. After what happened last week, I don't believe him. He was just caught with his pants down in a lie about the handshake snub with Baker Mayfield, right? Jesse Smollett said more true things about what happened in Chicago than Richard Sherman in this handshake thing. So you have to take what he says with a grain of salt. And secondly, my theory on Sherman is that he takes himself way too seriously to be any good as a commentator. You have to be self-deprecating. You have to poke fun at your frailties. Sherman doesn't strike me as having the ability to be that kind of guy. And he would actually somehow be a downgrade from Booger McFarland, which is not a compliment. All right, it's not a compliment at all. Now, I will also tell you that the four-letter love hiring ex-jocks. I mean, it's all about that. So I don't doubt that Sherman could get a broadcasting job. They hired Jason Witten. How'd that work out? And make another mistake down that same road. All right, there it is. Mallard of the third degree. How did we do?
Ben, you passed this edition.
That is a winner. You can put it on the board. Yeah. All right, time now for the Insta Trivia. Atlanta Falcons quarterback Matty Ice, Matt Ryan, just the third player in the history of the NFL to throw for over 300 yards in each of his team's first six games this season. Kurt Warner and blank are the only others to do it. Again, Matt Ryan of Atlanta in another loss, thanks to their idiot kicker, is just the third player in NFL history to throw for over 300 yards in each of his team's first six games of a season. Kurt Warner and blank are the only others to do it. The answer next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, you sports figure guy or girl.
Who the hell are you talking to, son?
Here's some instant advice.
Hold that thought. No one's paid attention to me for 10 whole seconds.
And if you don't like it, screw you.
And away we go. It's time now for the Instant Advice Line brought to you by Discover Card. We treat you like you'd treat you. And who needs our advice this week? Who needs your advice? That would be Jared Goff of the LA Rams. The Rams have lost now 3 consecutive games. Jared Goff, El Stinko, he played like flatulence against the 49ers. 13 of 24 to 78 yards passing for the highest paid quarterback in pro football. Averaged 3.3 yards in a cloud of dust per pass. Yards per attempt, was sacked 4 times, didn't have an interception, but a passer rating of 60.8. Keep in mind, the last 2 games prior to this, Goff had a passer rating of 81.6. He has been lousy. It has been a fiasco for Jared Goff. So what is your advice to Jared Goff on how to turn things around? You are live on the air when you hear my voice at 877-99 on Fox, 877-996-6369. Hello, you are on the air. What's your advice, you on line 6?
Yeah, the quick football, go on Sesame Street and join Oscar the Grouch in the garbage can.
All right, thank you for that. Hang up on you. Your advice, please, you on line 5. Your advice to Jared Goff.
Holler and James would like to say, Jared Goff, you need to go to church and get off the steroids and maybe throw a lot of Hail Marys. Praise Jesus, hallelujah.
Well, I think he should actually get on the steroids because he needs something there. That's 877-99 on Fox. Line 4, you are next. We're giving advice to Jared Goff, line 4.
Listen to the Benny versus the Penny on the 5th hour with Ben Maller. He gets you to rooting for backdoor covers and a team starting the Oompa Loompa at quarterback.
That's right. Thank you for that. And you're the one that keeps track of all my picks there, Supermarket Steve. Hello, line 3. You are next, line 3.
I'm Fudgy Camo, and I love caramel ice cream and olives.
All right. Well, I'm so glad you were able to get through. It's the instant advice line for Jared Goff of the LA Rams, the highest paid quarterback. It's his birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Jared. I hope you have a big piece of cake. Maybe you'll choke on it. Let's go to you on line 3. Hello, line 3. All right. Line 3 is not paying attention. You're live on the air. Line 4. Hello, line 4.
I know it's you, Roberto.
Oh, he's back,
hey,
Roberto.
He's back.
We were worried about him. Line 5. Hello, line 5.
I think Jared Goff should play with a clothespin on his nose.
Yeah, that's a good point. Huh? I wonder if Sean the Hood guy was at that Steeler-Charger game. I wonder if he was down there hanging out. He said he was going to go tailgate, right? That's what he said with some Steeler fans. Line 6. Hello, line 6.
Brian Finley needs to run directly into the wildfires. He sucks.
All right, well, that's a big endorsement for you, Brian. One of your big fans calling in. All right.
Wow.
Random line. Hello, random line. You're on the air.
Jerk yourself away.
Go pitch for the Dodgers and choke with them.
All right. Line number 3. Hello, line 3.
Hey, brother. This is Smith's brother. He should grow a mullet.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that.
Brother. Well,
some best and the brightest,
brother.
Friendly. It doesn't get any better than this, does it? All right, line. I guess Finley's not talking. Hello, line 4.
Yep.
He did a real good job. No delay of games.
Yeah, okay, line 5. Hello, line 5.
Yeah, he needs to take the ride on the Bang Brothers bus.
Nah, I mean that would be a completely different career path. Hello, line 6.
Hey, tell Jared Goff to get a slump buster.
Yeah, that's just what he needs. Is he married, Jared Goff? I don't even know. He's married. I don't know. He might be. Might have gotten married. Now, line 1, or line 2. We don't have line 1. Hello, line 2.
Hello. I think you should switch lives with Kaepernick.
What'd he say? He was a lot of ambient noise. Something with Kaepernick. Line 3. Hello, line 3.
Jared and Sean, have the Pope say a Hail Mary for them.
Yeah, only the Pope can help Jared Goff at this particular point. We'll do one more and only one more. Koopaloo, pick the final call, the instant advice line for Jared Goff of the LA Rams.
Line 4.
Line number 4. Hello, line 4.
Yeah, Ben, I think he needs to take a week off and get with Dak Prescott
and start doing heavy amounts of hookers and cocaine.
All right, so hookers, there it is, hookers and cocaine. Thank you for that. There you go. Well, I guess Jared Goff has a girlfriend, but not a wife. Change girlfriends, Jared.